You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. We're joined this segment by Christian Whiten, who's a principal with D.C. International Advisory and also served as Deputy Special Envoy to the Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs. He's the author of Smart Power, Between Diplomacy and War. Christian, I wanted to talk a little bit about some ongoing discussions among the major powers, I guess, in the Pacific Rim, specifically China, Japan, and South Korea. Now, China and South Korea have a strained relationship due to North Korea and a number of other things. The Japanese and South Korea have issues that date all the way back, farther than World War II, but specifically some of the horrors that the Japanese weighed upon the Korean people during that war. What are the three of them talking about, and what may that portend for the region and the rest of us?
Well, it was fairly, pretty much all smiles at the meeting on November 1st. It took place in Seoul. You had the three leaders, at least leaders of Japan and South Korea, the Chinese premier, not the president, was there. But, you know, the usual stuff and verbiage came out of it about expanded trade. Apparently, it looked at one point like Lee Taekwong, the Chinese representative, was about to raise the issue of what Japan did in the war. You know, that's an evergreen issue for them because it's a way, apparently, to divide South Korea and Japan and to play to populist crowds in South Korea, especially over comfort women who are forced into prostitution. I take a fairly dim view of that. After all, Japan has atoned for the war in many, many ways over many, many decades. And, of course, if we want to talk history, maybe we should talk about the tens of millions of people who were abused by China. You know, one thing that I thought was notable in a bad way that came out of the meeting was a reference to restarting six-party talks over North Korea's nuclear weapons program. This is something that was tried throughout the entire Bush administration. It sidelined a lot of what my office was working on, which is trying to make life harder for the Kim dynasty in North Korea. And it would be, I think, just very unfortunate diplomatic development if that got started again, because, of course, North Korea does really well at the negotiating table.
Given the deal that was just made with Iran and the fact that there are a lot of other folks now interested in nuclear weapons, isn't it potentially a time to do something with North Korea regarding their nuclear program? They seem to have relations with some of those folks, and there's a fear they may potentially even sell weapons to people we definitely don't want to have them.
Right, Jim. No, I'm definitely in favor of doing something, and actually, you know, the Obama administration over the last 7 years has basically done nothing, almost by their own admission. They've described as one of strategic patience.
That's like leading from behind, right?
That's exactly right. Because time is not on our side. Sorry to rhyme for that. But, North Korea went from a country that could only really menace one country, South Korea, with a large conventional army. And now it is one that has a growing nuclear arsenal and growing nuclear capabilities that someday could reach, in fact, someday not far away, could reach the U.S. West Coast. But what we ought to do, instead of restarting talks where it's always how many goodies will we give to North Korea in exchange for a promise to disarm that it never delivers, I think we should take a different approach that treats North Korea as an extension of China, or at least China policy. China will always tell our diplomats that they are putting pressure on North Korea to behave better, that they are trying to reform this government. They are out of patience, but they never really do that. If you never really reach that point, if you look at their actions, trade with North Korea and China, it increases steadily over the last decade, slight dip this year because of the slowdown in China's economy. And a policy that seeks to put pressure on the regime, that tells the truth about China's support of the regime, at least start with honesty. And we can, of course, leave a path open for dialogue if North Korea truly wants to come in from the cold. But we got to talk about things that we want to talk about: disarmament, North Korea's human rights policy. It can't just be goodies for false promises again.
So given the longstanding Kim regime's intolerance, oppression, tyranny, I would run out of descriptors for how bad they are before we had time to finish the show. Can we do that with pressure from China on that regime, or do they in some way, shape, or form have to go?
I think it will probably they'll probably have to go. I just don't think that regime can be modified enough, and this is sort of typical of communist regimes. And the reason we were willing to support authoritarian regimes that were not democratic, but at least not communist, military governments like South Korea and Taiwan during the Cold War, they could be evolved. And in fact, they were evolved. The communist regimes, like the Stalinist regimes, unlikely. So I think a combination of pressure on North Korea, pumping information in, that's something we tried to do at the State Department, supporting not so much the Voice of America, but actual dissidents, defectors, people who can speak authoritatively to North Koreans who are subjected to total censorship, some of the things that worked well against the Soviet bloc and undermining support for governments there. And then just changing our military posture and our strategic posture in the Pacific so that China will realize its own security is being harmed by the conduct of its loser neighbor, the North Koreans, that, that North Korea's conduct will increase our support for missile defense in South Korea and Japan, bring more advanced air forces and naval forces into the Pacific, which China won't like.
Now, given the Chinese expansionism in the region, they don't seem to be particularly worried about what we're doing anyhow, and I'm not convinced. We did at least float a destroyer, past their new island bases in the South China Sea and, do some freedom of navigation type exercises. But can we convince them that getting rid of the Kims is in their, I guess, to their advantage or to their disadvantage if they don't? Because I'm not seeing a whole lot of leverage we have.
We have limited leverage, especially because, as you alluded to, there's been some great, I think, entrepreneurship. You have a new admiral who's in charge of Pacific Command, Admiral Harris. And you have at the Pentagon a Secretary of Defense who's probably one of the better cabinet officers of the Obama administration, Ash Carter, who wants to put some pressure, or at least have China see some sort of reaction, or else we're just giving them a green light to push us out of the Western Pacific. The pivot to Asia, which has been rebranded as the rebalancing to Asia, is largely fake. Putting 1,000 Marines in Darwin, Australia, intermittently, putting the highly vulnerable littoral combat ship in Singapore, while we're removing more capable destroyers and cruisers from the Pacific. Well, what that amounts to is a verbal pivot, but when the Chinese look, they don't care so much about verbs, they care about actual political force. I think the overall point is we have to restore our military, and also we should deepen our trade relationships. The Trans-Pacific Partnership that's coming together undoubtedly has some flaws, but the idea that we will trade more among the democracies to the exclusion of kleptocracies like China, I think is important for, frankly, trying to put China in a box.
Okay, so let's say we can find a way to get the Chinese on board with changing their policy towards North Korea. Is there anybody there who can run things other than the Kims?
Oh, I think if you look at that, it is an interesting environment, certainly, to put it lightly. But if you look at the collapse of other communist states, it's not, the place is not going to look like Beverly Hills overnight. But these are discussions we should start to have. I mean, start to talk about how North Korea would be governed. People say in the United States that, oh, the Chinese would hate this, and I'm sure they're very concerned about this, but are they really going to be terrified that American forces will now pull up to their border? We have 25,000 troops in South Korea. We're not invading the Chinese mainland with 25,000 troops. The South Koreans looked at German unification, saw how much it costs, and are afraid correctly that North Korean unification or Korean Peninsula unification would cost a lot more. Let's have discussions about a transition period, what a government would look like. It would probably look like a post-Soviet sort of Soviet Union type government, if you look at particularly Central Asia, where it wouldn't resemble democracy in the United States. There would be some intermittent period, but at least it would be a lot better than what we have now, potentially better for China, too.
Thank you, Christian, for your insights as to how we may be able to nudge the Chinese to nudge the North Koreans out of the way. He is a principal with the D.C. International Advisory Group. Up next, we'll be talking with Dr. Sebastian Gorka, who is chairman of the Threat Knowledge Group. This is Jim Hansen doing Secure Freedom Radio.
Visit us at facebook.com/Secure Freedom with Frank Gaffney.